Hey everyone, today's episode is from my speech I gave to a group of Google clients. I wanted to share it all with you because of how valuable it is this time to boost employee morale. I'm going to teach you five things to teach all of your employees. Also, don't forget to join me this Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern for my free training. You can text me anytime at 949-298-2905 to register. Email me, david@dmeltzer.com, or visit me at David, motherfucker. Sorry. Almost missed. All right, sorry.
You just pick up at the end, you can stitch it together.
Yeah, I know. Also, wasn't that funny? Also, don't forget to join me this Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern for my free training. You can always text me at 949-298-2905 to register. Email me at david@dmeltzer.com or visit dmeltzer.com/training to register. This is Entrepreneurs the Playbook.
I'm going to give a little story, my journey, to give some perspective of value and then give some specific pragmatic advice on how we can help people with the four things that they can control: their mindset, their feelings, what they think and hear, especially what they say as well. So looking at that, I just give you a little bit of background. My journey is really about relationship between two things, and I think it's aligned with what is happening today to help you as well. The two things are currencies. One is the currency that you know. A currency is an object of energy that you put into the flow to get what you want. And that currency is money. And then the other currency, which isn't talked about as much in the corporate world, but I believe it should be in the non-dogmatic way, is the currency of faith. And that's what we think, say, do, believe, and understanding our own personality traits, characteristics, obsessions, and addictions, what I call our unconscious competencies, our quantum being. So my journey is one of a relationship between those currencies, the currency of money, which at an early age, I believe, bought happiness and love, and faith itself of thinking, saying, doing, believing, and what my own personality traits, characteristics, obsessions, and addictions were aligned with, and how those values were formed to create what I wanted out of my life. And so I was born in a place called Akron, Ohio. The great place of, thing about being born in Akron is it's a great place to be from. And it's a great perspective builder. But my dad left when I was five, and I had five siblings, six kids, a single mom. My mom worked two jobs. She was a second grade teacher. And then she would pack our dinners in a paper bag in a Country Squire station wagon and fill up turnstiles at convenience stores with greeting cards. My mom has several different attributes that's helped me in my life. The first is she has the belief that the fetus wasn't fully developed till after graduate school. She was a third degree black belt in the martial arts, the martial art of Jewish guilt. She woke us all up at 5 a.m., which still today seems to be the greatest parenting advice ever. I was too tired ever to get in trouble. And she also believed that you either were a doctor, a lawyer, or a failure. And so the cool thing about what I've learned about myself is I'm born with the happy gene. And so it well equips me to teach happiness and empower others to be happy. Happy is so important. Why? Well, in these days especially, happiness is the strongest virus of all time. It spreads by simply witnessing it. It strengthens you emotionally, physically, spiritually. It actually increases and strengthens your immune system. So it protects you against any type of virus. It is also a connector. It allows us to understand that the light, love, and lessons of the universe comes through us for others, which is a lesson that I've learned in the currency of faith. And so when I started out at 5 years old, my dad left with a single mom and I had no money, but I was super happy. The only time I wasn't happy was when there was financial stress. A car would break down, a dishwasher, my mom couldn't afford summer camp, was worried about how she was going to feed five boys and a girl. And I decided at the young age of five that the currency that I was going to focus in on was money, that I was going to buy my mom a house and a car, make over $1 million and retire at a young age and be happy all the time. And so I created this methodology of enjoying the consistent, everyday, persistent, without quit pursuit of my potential. Now, I was very clear on my what as well. I knew my why. I believe that everybody in the world, and I think it's important as leaders of companies, that we know that everybody in the world knows their why. Their why is actually to help somebody or something. That's easy. You need to help people with their what. And I was blessed because I knew my what. Right? My what was to make money. And my why was to buy my mom a house and a car and to be happy. And so I decided through this perspective of enjoying the consistent, persistent pursuit of my potential that I would be a professional football player. Now, I come from a long lineage of doctors and lawyers as dictated from the previous philosophy. I think I'm one of the tallest and unfortunately in my family, the most handsome, but at 5'7", I decided I would be a professional football player. And I utilized that perspective of consistent, persistent behavior, consistent every day, persistent without quit. And I got a scholarship to college. My dream end one play into my college career when I got ran over by Christian Okoye, who was later known as the Nigerian Nightmare. He was the AFC Player of the Year. I joke around that he gave me his first signature, a size 13 shoe on my chest. But I remember lying on my back thinking, doctor, lawyer, or failure. And that led me to be pre-med, to be a doctor. And I, once again, following the dollar, the currency of money, went to be a doctor. I talked to my brother my freshman year, visited him. And here's lesson number one. And we have to realize this as leaders. I went and wanted to be a doctor, and I didn't realize that doctors had to be in hospitals. So when I saw my brother, I'm like, I hate hospitals. He almost fell over. He said, dude, you're pre-med at a really good college. God knows you're not going to be a professional football player. How do you not know doctors need to be in hospitals? I said, well, I want to be a sports physician, training room, sidelines. I never thought they'd have to study in hospitals. He told me, and write this one down, be more interested than interesting. And as a general rule, not only to get stable data today, as we are in unprecedented, uncertain times, we have accelerated change and growth. Things are occurring at light speed. We need to be more interested than interesting. We can't just assume or accept facts about the circumstances that we're in whatever ones you want to choose. We need to be more interested than interesting and encourage others and empower others to do the same. Utilizing that philosophy, doctor, lawyer, failure, and being more interested than interesting, I went to law school. I actually reversed engineered my law school to find the law school that had the highest paying graduates, which was Tulane University, because they had oil and gas lawyers, oil and gas litigators, which was the highest paid job out of law school. I actually went to the law school that I chose because people made the most money. That's how focused I was on my what. Fortunately for me, when I graduated law school, I had two job offers. One was to be an oil and gas litigator. The other was to make even more money selling legal research online in 1992. A lot of you probably remember the internet in 1992, or the aspect or imagination of the internet. Well, I went to my mom to ask her what to do. And without blinking, my mom told me that I had a real lawyer, that the internet was a fad, and that I was going to be a salesman. I would lose all of the value that I had gotten out of law school and everything that I had worked so hard for, and she would be so disappointing in me. Lesson number two, very important for you as a leader, as well as the people, your consumer, as well as your associates. You need to vote for what you want. Just because people love you, care about you, have a relationship with you, doesn't mean they give you good advice. We need to make sure through this effective way of being more interested than interesting that we find and vote for what we want. What happens so often is people vote for what other people want for them and they end up resenting them. They end up not getting what they want and they could have easily stuck to that enjoyment of the consistent, persistent pursuit of their potential. For the first time in my life, I voted for what I wanted and I sold legal research online. In 9 months, I was a millionaire. I bought my mom a house and a car. Didn't have enough to retire. Things had changed since I was 5. But meanwhile, everything from then on supported the fact of my philosophy or strategy of currency, money, that it bought happiness and it bought love. I ended up going on to the Silicon. I sold West Publishing for $3.4 billion in 1995. Went to the Silicon Valley, learned how to use my skills, my knowledge, and my desire to raise money for corporations and charity. And at 30 years old, ended up being the CEO of the world's first smartphone, better known as the PCE phone. Back then, they called them convergence devices in 1999. But it was a great experience, and I was a multimillionaire. Now, my journey had led me from three worlds, a world of not enough in Akron, Ohio, where there wasn't enough of anything for anyone, where I was a victim, everything happened to me. The second was the world that I was in now, the world of just enough. I was buying anything that I wanted. I was buying things I didn't need to impress people I didn't like. And it was for the first time in my life, I was unhappy. At 30 years old, I had married my dream girl, a girl that I met in the fourth grade. She hated me in the sixth grade. My best friend asked her to go study at sixth grade camp and embarrassed me. And she said, no, tell him to ask me himself. So I threw an egg at her and then made fun of her through junior high school. Once again, though, being able to marry this unbelievable woman reaffirmed what I believed was money buys happiness and love. And that was the reason that she was marrying me after all these years. At 30, though, my life changed. For the first time, I had somebody try to teach me a lesson, because at that time, my faith was driven by ego, the need to be right, the need to be offended, separate, inferior, superior, anxious, frustrated, angry, resentful, scared. If you, any of these feelings evoke emotion from you now, that's because I think that we are, as a collective consciousness, living in a great ego-based consciousness. And so I will teach how to be a ferocious Buddha and be a leader within the context of ego-based consciousness and put everyone back into the trajectory. But I was in ego-based consciousness at 30. My dad gave me a birthday present for the first time in 20 years. My dad had left, as I suggested, when I was 5. He was my hero. By 10, he was my zero. What do I mean by that? At 10, he forgot my birthday. And not only did he forget my birthday, but he told me that he didn't believe in birthdays and he didn't celebrate birthdays, which I knew was a lie because he celebrated his own birthday and he celebrated my siblings' birthdays. So I ended up hating my father and, you know, literally realizing he was a liar, a cheater, a manipulator, a back-end seller, and an overseller. At 30, he gave me the first present in 20 years. He gave me a sport coat. And when I put it on, I started to cry. My wife asked me, why are you crying? I said, because it fits. I've waited 20 years to have a relationship with my father. He finally gets it. And then I opened the jacket up and I looked inside and he had torn out all the pockets. I was crushed, immediately going into ego-based consciousness again, so angry and frustrated. I called him and I'm like, what the F? Dad, how can you send me a birthday present after all these years that I can't even wear? Calmly, he said, I didn't send it to you to wear. I sent it to you to remind you that you're just like me. I'm worried about you. I want you to hang the jacket in your closet and to remind you, you can't take anything with you when you're gone. I want you to remember that money doesn't buy happiness and love. I want you to remember you're just like me. I want you to be buried in that jacket. I want you to look at it every day. Well, I wasn't ready to hear that. I was in the collective consciousness of what a lot of people are in today, in this world for just enough for me. Everything was for me, buying things I didn't need for people I didn't even like to impress them. And I hung it up, told him to F off and hung up on him. But 2006 came years later, and I got a second reminder about these currencies that are so important to be a servant leader, to provide value and service to others, so important to live a radically humble life as a leader, in order to effectuate constructive change. That's more than ever needed today as leaders, in order to be happy, to make a lot of money, to help a lot of people and have a lot of fun, to enjoy the consistent, persistent pursuit of their potential. Well, in 2006, I ran the most notable sports agency in the world. It's known as Lee Steinberg Sports and Entertainment. A lot of people know that firm from the movie Jerry Maguire. It was based off of our firm. I was living the high life. I was a multimillionaire, surrounding myself with celebrities, athletes, entertainers, going to the greatest sporting events, entertainment events, and award shows ever created. And I went golfing with my best friend, Rob. Rob I've known since the fourth grade. He was the boy that asked my wife at sixth grade camp to go study for me. That's how much I trusted him. Him and I hadn't talked for very long, but he went golfing with me and I invited him to go to the Masters with me and Chris Carter and Warren Moon and Michael Jordan and Shannon Sharp, these unbelievable athletes. And he said, no. I said, what are you talking about? No. Why don't you hang out with me anymore? I said, I don't like who you hang out with. And I definitely don't like the stuff you're doing. I immediately got defensive and I said, what are you talking about? I'm not doing what those guys are doing. He said, David, you could lie to me, but don't lie to yourself. I was crushed in 2006. I cried. I realized, man, I am lost, just like my wife and my dad and my mom had been suggesting to me. I'm totally unhappy. I have to figure this out. But no more than 2 weeks later, I went to the Grammy Awards. I lied to my wife. We had three daughters at the time in 2006. And I lied to my wife, told her I was going to go to a business meeting. I changed clothes in the car and I went to the Grammy Awards with Little John, the rapper. Came home 5:30 in the morning in an altered state of mind. And there she was, my wife, waiting for me. And immediately when I walked in, she told me, I'm not happy. I'm going to leave you. You better take stock in who you are and what you want to become, or you're going to be dead. I wasn't ready to listen to her. I got mad at her, back again in the ego-based consciousness, need to be right, offended, separate, inferior, superior, guilty, resentful. So I said, how dare you talk to me that way? Look around you. Who do you think provided all these things? That's right. Money buys love and happiness. How dare you not love me or be happy? That's impossible. And so what I did at that time is I stormed in my room, woke up in the morning, even madder. I accelerated an ego-based consciousness, separating myself from the truth, thinking about how I could take all my money, all happiness and love from her, even including my kids, thinking about what divorce lawyer I should call, blaming her for everything. And then I looked over in the closet and my life changed. That darn jacket my dad gave me was yelling out to me. I'd realized at that moment that I was just like my father. Everything I hated about my father, I hated about myself. I was a liar, a cheater, a manipulator, a back-end seller, and an overseller. And so at that time, I went and took inventory of my values. And I decided what my personal values were going to be, my experiential values, my giving values, and receiving values. At that time, I realized that I wasn't a giver. I always believed the more you give, the more you get. The problem was every time that I gave, I was trading. I had some condition or judgment attached to my giving at all time. If I gave a down payment to a house for one of my brothers, I expected something back, respect, love, gratitude. Something had to be back. If I donated to my community, I expected acknowledgement and recognition. Everything was a trade for me. At that time, by taking my personal experiential giving and receiving values, I shifted the paradigm of value to the more that I receive, the more I can give. And I started focusing in on receiving, that I was worthy of everything that I received, because all that I wanted was to give my life away, to give everything that I received away. And that's when I realized that I could live in a world not as a victim, not a world of not to live in a world of just where everything was for me, buying things I didn't need to impress people I didn't like. But there was this abundant world, the one that I teach, the one that I want you to share with your communities, your associates, your consumers, the world of more than enough of everything for everyone. I realized that I was connected at all times to the most powerful source of love, light, and lessons. And I was, through ego, creating an interference or corrosion to that connection. That I held more power in my thumb, enough power to literally light up Manhattan. And that every time that I went into ego-based consciousness, I accelerated an interference or corrosion to that. And that my own existence was to appreciate all of the love, the light, and the lessons that I was connected to in order to allow it to come through me and add value, my personal inventory of values, and give it away to everything I'm connected to and everyone. A tree has no branches. It isn't equal. It's unified, right? Equality creates an idea of separateness. There is no separateness. There's no inferiority, superior. There's just one. one branch of a tree would not go to war against another branch. We need to stop creating resistance, voids, and obstacles. We have to stop creating interference and corrosion between, number one, that which we're connected to, the most powerful source of light, love, and lessons, and everything else that we're connected to. We are creating this problem. And so it led me to teach these five things. Number one, take inventory of your value every day. Your personal values, your experiential values, your giving and receiving values, which are also one, knowing that you can't give what you don't have. And looking at those values, living with gratitude, number one. Gratitude allows the past to be better with its lessons, the present to be better than that, and the future be brighter than that. If you want to change your life, say thank you before you go to bed and when you wake up. Say it for 30 straight days. I guarantee you, quantitatively, your life will change. It takes 0.1 seconds to say thank you before you go to bed and when you wake up. And if I pulled the 100 people that was on here right now and asked who here thinks they can say thank you every day and who here thinks it would change your life, every one of you would raise your hand. The saddest part is, by the end of the day, half of you won't say thank you. By tomorrow morning, another half of you won't say thank you. And within 3 days, almost all of us won't say thank you. I have studied physics, quantum physics, metaphysics. I sit on the Transformational Leadership Council with Jack Canfield and Bob Proctor and Deepak Chopra and all these great thought leaders have written all the books and wisdom that they share. And all of them agree that gratitude is the most powerful source of light, love, and lessons. Gratitude is the highest frequency. It will change your life. But yet all of us, including me, who it took 9 months to do it every day for 30 straight days, create an ego-based consciousness that separates or interferes or corrodes from that truth. So we have to live with gratitude as a value, empathy or forgiveness. We can only forgive ourselves and then allow that to come through us for others. We can't give what we don't have. So it's really easy. We don't have to forgive others because they deserve it. Forgive yourself because we deserve it. Accountability, ask yourself two questions. What did I do to attract this to myself, and what am I supposed to learn from it? Don't live in blame, shame, and justification, and don't allow everyone else to do the same. We have to, especially virtually today, especially with the fear, the anxiety, the ego-based consciousness that exists, we have to create a mechanism to clear the interference, to clear the void, shortages, and obstacles. People are not gatekeepers, they're sponsors. Everybody knows somebody that can help us, or they're power sponsors, somebody that can help us and knows somebody that can help us. We need to utilize the second rule with accountability of asking and attracting. What does that mean? Statistically, if we're going to create a flow or a change, we need to ask for help. Right? And we need to ask how we can be of service or of value. So there's two series of questions to learn. Number one, learn to ask a series of questions and teach others to ask a series of questions of how we can provide service or value or solutions to other people. And we do this in person, on the phone, via email and media, radio, print, TV, and social media. We do it every single day. I always talk about my favorite story of asking is the Home Depot. Home Depot has four different checkouts. It has the consumer, it has the garden, it has the contractor, and it has self. Do you know which one of those checkouts sells three times as many warranties as all the other three checkouts combined? It's the self checkout. The self checkout sells warranties, warranties for their appliances and their tools and other things. Do you know why? Because the machine asks every time. You need to ask how you can be of service or value. And more importantly, you need to ask, do you know anyone that can help me? And we need to do that not just of our consumers, but we need to ask it internally, especially today with the separation that has occurred through the virtual nature of our business, in order to effectuate a better connection so that both currencies, money and faith, can flow freely. Look, money doesn't disappear. It just slows down or stops. Let's create the flow of currency in order to effectuate abundance, a world of more than enough of everything for everyone. So the first thing that we need to work on with everyone is taking inventories of our values, and don't be afraid of being a hypocrite. That just means that you're accelerating and growing and changing. Don't be afraid of saying, oh, those weren't my values yesterday. I've now learned something and improved myself and changed and grew. also ask and attract, open-ended questions of how you can be of service or of value, or do you know anyone that can help me? The third thing that we need to do, especially now in the remote atmosphere that we're in, is we need to be students of our calendar. What does that mean? To study something means to, number one, pay attention to it, but two, give our intention to it. If you want to know the math of the universe of luck, I always say that attention plus intention equals coincidence. A coinciding, two angles coincide at a perfect time and a perfect place to create a perfect angle. This is what attention and intention does. And we need to study three different things. Number one, you have to study what you have planned. Study what you have planned with a lens of productivity, of how much service or value you're going to provide, a lens of accessibility, which is a bifocal, a lens of how accessible am I, and two, how am I accessing what I want, and a lens of gratitude. The lens of gratitude allows us to find the light, the love, and lessons in everything. It allows us to learn to love everything that we do. We don't love everything you do. I've had some stupendous positions in my life, activity I get paid for that most people would do for free or even pay to do. But guess what? I didn't love 100% of it. I had to learn to love it. I had a lens of gratitude to find the light, the love, and the lessons in everything I do. So I study what I had planned. I also study what I don't have planned, the white space, the empty space in my calendar. I'm studying with the same lens of productivity, accessibility, and gratitude. And then I also study sleep. Sleep's the number one habit that we all share. It's approximately 8 hours of every day of our lives, and most people don't pay any attention or give it any intention, and they're missing out. Because it's the only time of day that our conscious and our ego are naturally out of our way. We naturally have cleared the connection of our subconscious and unconscious mind to the powerful source of light, love, and lessons. We actually, instead of living like the myth of Sisyphus, where you push a boulder up the hill all day long, just to have it roll down to the bottom of the hill for the next morning, you now can plateau and grow. By studying sleep, you can start your day at the highest frequency. You can use that as a baseline to determine when you're in ego-based consciousness, when you're accelerating in the wrong direction, creating void shortages and obstacles in your life, creating corrosion or interference between the light, the love, and the lessons in you, moving and voting for the wrong things, creating unhappiness, disturbance in your life. But instead, we can effectuate by simple pragmatic studying a happiness, a productivity, accessibility, and gratitude that you've never seen before. The fourth thing is do it now. Do it now is straight math. It's a habit that I have. Anything that presents itself in my life, I ask myself, can I do it now? And if I can do it now, I do it. It's a great differentiator in my career, because there's a huge difference between people that get things done and people that don't. It's a huge differentiator. And guess what? 100% of the things that you do now get done. 100% of the things, you can't beat that. And if you can't get it done, then put it in your calendar tomorrow. Prioritize, as Roosevelt taught, prioritize by what's most important first, not what's most urgent. If something's this urgent, you go ahead and delegate it, but by what's most important first, and prioritize that and do it tomorrow by making it a planned portion of the calendar. Do things now. Now, the last thing is practice ending fear. And this is the majority of what we need to do today. And get others to do. Practice ending fear. Fear itself creates that interference, the corrosion between the two currencies, the currency of money and the currency of faith, right? If we have green card or gold card or platinum card or black card, we can buy more and more and more. Less interference between us and the merchant. If we have green card faith or gold card faith or black card faith, once again, what we want comes more rapidly and accurately. And the only way that we upgrade our credit into a black card is to practice ending fear. And we have to empower others to do the same within the consumer, within our own internal people, within our communities, so that we can create abundance, a world of more than enough of everything for everyone. So how does that work? Well, first, we need to identify what ego-based consciousness is. We need to practice that. We have to raise our awareness, our frequency, our vibration in order to figure that out. We have to learn that, oh, the need to be right, the need to be offended, separate, inferior, superior, anxious, frustrated, angry, guilty. All these different feelings are what create ego-based behavior, accelerating in the wrong direction, corrosion and interference. We need to identify that. And this is where the concept of a ferocious Buddha comes in. You have to be ferocious in order to allow your feelings to be your thermostat, not your bank account. Bank account, it's a ingredient of the mercury that's contained within the feeling thermometer, but it is not the end all. I had learned through my journey, money doesn't buy happiness or love. But money is super important. It's one of the currencies of the universe. Money allows you to shop. And if you shop for the right things, you will be happy. And if you shop for the wrong things, the things you don't need, the things you buy to impress other people you don't like, you're going to be unhappy. But money's really important. But we have to be ferocious about identifying what gets in our way, what interferes with both currencies. And so when we identify one of the needs of fear, one of the secondary needs of the ego, we have to be ferocious and stop. And once we identify that, we then drop. We drop to Buddha, right? To be at center, at peace, to raise our awareness, to get into the right trajectory. And then we're ferocious again and we move in the right trajectory. When you're in ego-based consciousness, when your employees are in ego-based consciousness, when your consumers are in ego-based consciousness, their mind, their body, and soul are on fire. I was taught as a young boy, if you catch on fire, you got to stop, drop, and roll. In order to stop, drop, and roll out of ego, you have to be a ferocious Buddha. And you have to teach others to be the same. There aren't tough situations. There's tough people. And tough people are ferocious Buddhas. They know how to stop and not make things worse. They know how to drop down into peace, into center, to make the right decisions that have the most abundant results, to productively create value for everyone. That's why I created the 120 rule. I practice it every day. I wake up and I imagine my rooms full of $100 bills, and I hand out $100 bills to everyone and ask for $20 bills back. And I'm always asking, can you see any reason you won't want to do this? Just to feel the emotion and the energy. Because I know there's four things that I can control. And in a situation when we have compressed uncertainty, when we have accelerated change, when people are afraid and live in ego-based consciousness, to give them the ability to be in control. Control of our mindset. Control of our feelings. Control of what we hear and say. Remember, it's not what you say, it's what they hear. But we're inundating ourselves with data all day long that has negative infection. Right? We need to control. We can seek any data that we need. It's important to get stable data. Go seek it. You don't have to be inundated with negativity. And then finally, we are in control of what we do. Right? And so we want to make sure that we are moving and growing and accelerating in the right trajectory, in the truth trajectory, enjoying the consistent, everyday, persistent, without quit, pursuit of our potential. One of the other things that get in our way is the understanding of progress. So many people today, some of your employees may feel this, your consumers, they feel stuck. I have a saying, get stuck being stuck. Why? Because stuck is good. Stuck means that you're growing, you're accelerating. If you didn't feel stuck, there would be no pressure being put in the acceleration and growth in order to feel like you're stuck in a room. You would have to try to get out of a room and actually put effort and attention in that in order to feel stuck. The problem is that our senses, the way we see things, smell things, hear things, taste things, and touch things, are inaccurate. And our memories are even more inaccurate. So what does that mean? That while we're in the consistent, persistent pursuit of our potential, while we're finding the light, the love, and the lessons, while we're learning, we literally feel stuck because we don't realize that we're growing. We don't realize the incremental growth. And if you don't believe me, go ahead and take the smallest measurement that you want and double it 20 times. It'll turn into a very large success. Most people, they get to 25% of the way there in whatever they want in their life, if they're lucky enough to actually put their attention on what they want. 99% of the people quit when they're 25% of the way there. And then the 1% that continue on, because they're getting better at what they're doing, it only takes them half as much time to get to 50%. And unfortunately, at that time, 99% of the 1% quit because they too start listening to what other people think. They start listening to the laughs, the scoffs, people making fun of them. They're not patient enough to allow people to applaud them. And they start voting for what other people want for them. The ordinary. That's all anyone ever wants for you is ordinary. But if you vote for what you want, it'll be elected in your life. You could be extraordinary. And it only takes you a half as much time to get to 100% and half as much to 200 and half as much. It's like watching your kids grow. You can sit at home, never know how big your kid's getting because they don't seem to grow at all because our perceptions and our memory is so bad. Until you have to go buy them a pair of shoes and realize, oh my God, it's been 3 weeks and you need a new pair of shoes. Or their grandparents come over and like, oh my gosh, she's grown so much. The same thing happens with your progression and acceleration of your potential. The same thing happens with your bank accounts and your businesses. You have to understand segmentation. It only occurs in the enjoyment of the consistent, persistent pursuit of your potential. It only occurs when you stay in the trajectory and plateau and grow and take inventory of your values and ask and attract and take, be a student of your calendar and do it now, but mainly practicing ending fear. I'm going to end before I take Q&A with one story to tell you how powerful this is. It's a story that changed my life because I realized the subtleties of success. And it's so important today with the virus and the protests and the looting and the anger and the frustration, everything that's going on. It's so important to know the subtlety of success, of how the ego, how fear creates interference and corrosion and the changes that we don't want. Well, I believe in having two routines in your life. One routine is a set routine where everything's normal. My routine is very complex. I wake up every morning at 4 a.m. I meditate for 20 minutes to find my highest frequency, the plateau of the day, the baseline for my truth. Then I get ready for 10 minutes and I go exercise for a minimum of an hour from 4:30 to 5:30. From 5:30 to 6:30, I do research. I'm a student in my calendar. I study for books, interviews, speeches, etc. 6:30 to 7:30 is family time, getting ready, making lunches and dinners and breakfasts and lunches and having fun. 7:30, I do executive coaching calls. 8 o'clock, I execute on the student of the calendar. 4:45, I do more coaching calls. At 5:30 to 7:30, I turn everything off, spend family time. 7:30 to 9, I do research. I study my calendar, interviews, write books, etc. 9 o'clock, I have a wind down routine so that I guarantee to be passed out by 11 p.m. at the latest. And then I start the next day at a higher plateau, not the myth of Sisyphus. I don't start over at a lower frequency. Now, when things change, I use my values in order to determine my routine. Minimum of an hour a day on my health, minimum of 30 minutes with my wife, a minimum of 30 minutes with my 10-year-old son, minimum of 2 minutes a day with my 3 teenage daughters. I asked for 5, they gave me 2. A minimum of 1 minute a day with my mom, just to tell her 4 things that every parent needs to know every day, that I'm healthy, 1, 2, I'm happy, 3, I love her, and 4, I appreciate her. If you want to improve the relationship with any family member, make sure they know that you're happy, healthy, you love them and appreciate them. Well, anyway, I was 17, it was a Saturday, had an unbelievable meditating, got ready, came out at the highest frequency of my house, and lo and behold, my 17-year-old daughter's car was missing. I immediately went into ego-based consciousness. I was pissed. I grabbed my phone and I was about to call and say, where the F are you? Where the F is your car? And then I was a ferocious Buddha. I actually, for one of the few times in my life, did what I teach. It'd be nice if I did it all the time. I'd be extremely successful and happy. I'm just happy and successful. Anyway, I stopped. I stopped and I dropped down into center and I asked myself, why are you so angry? And I realized I'm not angry. I'm scared. I'm scared something has happened to one of the most important people in my life who I'm actually responsible for. I'm not just scared, I'm terrified. And from that truth-based consciousness, instead of the ego-based consciousness of anger, I called my daughter and she answered. At 4:30 in the morning, she answered, hello. I said, hey, where are you? I'm in my bed. Where's your car? Oh, daddy, it's at the grocery store. Kids were drinking. And you told me if kids are drinking that I should just Uber home. Oh, I'm so glad you're okay. And I'm so proud of you. Thank you for listening to me. Oh, it's okay, daddy. I love you. I love you too. Might seem like a mundane story, and why am I telling it on a Google call for a bunch of leaders of companies? I'll tell you why. Because this is the basis of what happens in every business and every life. If I would have called an ego-based consciousness or had a communication with my employee or consumer or partner or whoever else that we deal with during the day when we make that mistake, but if I would have called my daughter and said, where the F are you? And she would have said, I'm in my bed. Where the F is your car? It's at the grocery store. You told me not to drive it if kids were, you were drinking. I'm going to take your car. I'm going to take your phone. I hate you, daddy. If that's not bad enough, where our country, where our world, where our businesses fall down is where I almost fell down. Because the next time my daughter's out with her friends and kids are drinking, she would decide that it'd be better not to get in trouble. It'd be better not to have a hypocrite as a father to take her car and her phone. So next time kids were drinking, she may jump in her car and change her life forever, or and change my life forever, and or change somebody that we don't even know's life forever. Imagine how much corrosion and interference that ego-based consciousness can cause you. In order to be a great leader, a compassionate capitalist, a servant leader, we need to empower others to empower others to be happy. I've been training people for free for 20 years, every single Friday, with a simple mission of empowering over a billion people to be happy, to provide value, and to ask for value. I need every single Friday to find 1,000 people like you that are willing to empower 1,000 people to empower 1,000 people, 1,000 times 1,000, a million times a thousands of billion. If I can empower a billion people with a collective consciousness of abundance, this world will change. We all will work within the truth consciousness, not in the interference and corrosion that's created. And it's as simple as being gracious, forgiving, accountable, and inspired, knowing that we have to take inventory of our values every day. We need to ask and attract a series of questions of how we can be of service or value, a series of questions of how people can help us. We need to be a student of our calendar. We need to do it now. And most importantly, help me help you, no pun intended, to empower others to be happy by practicing ending fear. I appreciate everyone's time. I hope it was productive, and I'm extremely grateful to answer any questions that we may have right now. Thank you so much. Awesome. I'll assume I'll just jump right into it. Got a bunch of anonymous people. That's cool. Do you talk about effective management in any of your books? On the same note, do you have any books that you would recommend effective leadership? Yes. So I wrote Compassionate Capitalism as well as Creating the Life You Love with Jack Canfield. Also, Game Time Decision Making all talk about management side of things. Connected to Goodness talks more on the individual manifestation side. Leadership books that I love is, to me, Think and Grow Rich is extraordinary. The Power of Intention, Wayne Dyer, extraordinary books. On the habit side of things of leadership, Atomic Habits is awesome. But feel free to reach out. I got a whole list of great books, but I'd start with Think and Grow Rich if you haven't read that. That's the gold mine. And happy to send everybody, by the way, my books for free. So I don't sell anything. My training's for free on Friday. It's 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern. Please reach out to me to get those books. It's david@dmeltzer.com. I'm sure they'll post where to reach me by text or email. What are the key traits that make a great virtual leader? How does this differ from a great leader in normal circumstances? So the traits that I think that make a great leader is one, credibility. And two, it's the ability to connect emotionally. And then three, the ability to articulate quantified value, meaning here's quantified reasons, here's quantified impacts, and here's quantified capabilities. Now, you can use overall impact and features and benefits in order to effectuate the credibility, emotional attachment, and the quantification of reasons, impacts, and capabilities. But those are the key traits as a virtual leader that we need to carry over. And how does it differ than in normal circumstances? Well, it's much more difficult to create an emotional connection. You can have credibility. You can quantify and articulate the quantified reasons, impacts, and capability. But people buy on emotion for logical reasons. And if you can't make an emotional connection because you're not an effective communicator as a virtual leader, that you don't have the consistent communication or the persistent communication that's necessary in order to effectuate it, you're not going to have the same results as you do in normal circumstances. So really focus in on being more interested than interesting and asking people what they like, what they don't like, right? How you can make a difference. Find that delta of value and be able to deliver on it. And if you can't, then find somebody that can for them. At all times, I believe everybody should have three mentors at all times in their life, people that sit in the situation that they want to be in. And finding those people and asking for help is critical, especially in a virtual nature or environment that we're in. Next one, are you open to speaking at corporate events? If so, what's the best way to reach you? I hope that's a setup thing, of course. I love doing corporate events. I do them all the time. Yes, please reach out to me, david@dmeltzer.com or jake@dmeltzer.com or go to dmeltzer.com itself. There's a request. My text number, by the way, you can text me directly, is 949-298-2905. Love to help. And please reach out. That's a setup call. I hope wasn't someone from my team doing that, but if you're true, thank you. I appreciate it. Love doing that. What companies do you think have the best leadership? You know, it's so interesting. I think the companies that do the best in what I call a compassionate capitalist way, like John Paul Tudor, Warren Buffett, Bezos, and you might look at that. I look at overall quantitative change that occurs from a leader. And one of those changes is, what are you doing to give back? And, you know, those leaders have, you know, regardless of what they've done, like $10 billion donation to our environment does so much, even much more than some huge philanthropic endeavors where, you know, we're doing certain things. That money's going to go a long way. But, you know, the great leaders of companies to me, and there's so many, John Sculley with Pepsi and Apple, I thought, you know, incredible. Howard Schultz, you know, there's a lot of compassionate capitalists, Bill Gates. They're not perfect, by the way. So I can list out 20 reasons why they made mistakes. One thing I didn't mention, by the way, is pain. And this is, like, I look for people, I give an award called the Dummy Tax Award at my company. Every week I ask people what's the biggest mistake they made and what they learned from it. And we all share them. And then I give a bonus to whoever I think had the best lesson. Pain itself is just an indicator. It's a blinker. Pain is an indicator that you have a lesson to learn. Mental, physical, spiritual, emotional, financial pain. It's just an indicator. Hey, you got a lesson to learn. Let's change. That's our situation better. Here's an indicator. It's called pain, that you got to move in a different direction. You got to learn something. So in that essence, all of these leaders that have, I look for ones that made huge mistakes and have come back and learned from them and then taught other people so that they don't have to pay the dummy tax. It's one of the basis of why I think I'm a great executive business coach, is because I have paid a lot of dummy tax, you know, and you shouldn't have to pay that. And it creates a quantitative value for people. Who's the most interesting person you've ever had on your Entrepreneur Magazine podcast? Wow, I had so many, but Deepak Chopra, Wim Hof, Ray Lewis, super interesting. You know what's interesting? I didn't agree. Like, I had to take a lot of cuts on him, but interesting. Dennis Rodman was super interesting with his stories of going to North Korea. That was super. Danica Patrick is super interesting. I just did one, really interesting one, with, shoot, I'm drawing a blank on his name, but he's the CEO of Two Take Entertainment, used to be the chairman of CBS, and just an extraordinary one. I've done over 350 of these things, so it's hard to remember everyone. So pick and choose. Oh, Mike Mooseburger, nobody's heard of. You watch that one, right? It's called The Playbook. You can download it on Apple and Google and everywhere that you want. This is entrepreneur. But check out Mike Mooseburger. That one, if you don't leave just with a huge inspirational heart, nothing will move you. So thank you for asking that. What are three tips to keep our employees engaged in this new environment? Okay, one, this idea of emotional reward. You need, if you can make someone feel good about working with you, feel really proud and good, that's the number one tip to keep people engaged. They feel good about, they're finding and learning the lessons, they're searching for the lights, they enjoy the consistent, persistent pursuit. The way to do that is to make your company a value-based company, right? I only teach four things: gratitude, forgiveness, accountability, and inspiration. Right? Those are the four things I teach. The skills and the knowledge part will complement the desire, but they can learn skills and knowledge through mentorship, through YouTube, through anything within the company and without. But I'm looking for gratitude, forgiveness, accountability, and inspiration. The other way to keep them engaged too is to do fun things with them during the day. So like the dummy tax award. And the third way to keep them engaged is money, right? Incentivize people. People work for money. That's why I don't believe in the word work. I believe an activity you get paid for, an activity you don't get paid for. And I think deciphering that and discounting how much people, you know, want to feel good, how much fun they want to have, and then three, how much money they want to make. The difference is like the difference between motivation and inspiration. Number one, motivation, it's temporary. It's rocket fuel. It'll get you out of this atmosphere, but it's going to soul suck you. It sucks all your energy. Fear is a motivator. And it's a great motivator, but it's not going to last forever. Eventually, it's going to suck all your energy and soul out of you. Inspiration, on the other hand, will get you there, right? And so I like to, you know, think of motivation to get you up and get you back up. But inspiration, those value-based inspirational things that you can do, will get everyone there. So look within the context of whatever tips or engagement that you're looking for. Remember, certain things will motivate people, like money. It will motivate, but it won't inspire them. So, but you need both. If you feel there's a lull, you know, everything seems to be coming down on your business, you had to do some furloughs or layoffs, or, you know, something has happened that's discouraging, motivation gets people back up, but inspiration will get them there. So make sure that you're blending motivation with inspiration. All right, next one. How are you keeping your employees engaged at your company? We're working virtually, and we have from day one. Number one, I'm using those three things that I just mentioned, but I'm doing it consistently, 7 days a week. So I'm utilizing and being accessible, asking every day how can be of service or value, making sure that I'm there facilitating, like a coach, the connection between everyone. And then even furthermore, allowing them to have fun, doing interesting things, giving the same awards, the same bonus. And I'm also getting a temperature of how they feel as a collective. So I do a Monday morning meeting, and then they do a Friday training, which everyone, you know, my original 20 years of doing free trainings on Friday stem from people showing up to get lunch in my office. So they're conditioned to show up on Friday. So I use Fridays to inspire, Mondays to motivate, organize. We do 4:45 every day, student of your calendar, for 15 minutes. Everybody gets on a huge Zoom, and we're all students of our calendar so that we're all on the same page. Looks like we're out of time.
Hey, Dave, I think we can speak to you all day. And I think there's one other question that wasn't posted in the Q&A. If you have a few more minutes, I think it's important and very timely. This is from Janine. She asks, is there any specific advice you have for leadership during these challenging times for all Americans, but especially for people of color? I'll hand it over to you. That'll be our last question, and then we'll wrap things up.
Thank you for the softball, easy question to finish.
Yeah, of course.
I really appreciate it. the word unification. So think about it. And this is for all differentiators that people create, especially color. Obviously, my business partner is Hall of Fame quarterback Warren Moon. I have fought for equality, and now I fight for unification. It's different. I used to say, you know, black quarterbacks, this, and then I changed it to, I can't wait for the day that people just talk about quarterbacks. You know, he has a weak arm, he's stupid, whatever the differentiator is, but we're all the same matter, and we all matter because we're all connected. And I said earlier, a tree has no branches. One branch would not go to war against another branch. And right now, what we need to talk about, and we need to talk about, we need to raise awareness and communication, is a few things. One, let's talk about unification, right? Not separation. Let's talk about unification other than equality. We don't want equality. We want to be unified. Everyone's the same. Everyone, there's no separation. There's no need for equality when there's unification. So one, let's talk about unification. Then also let's talk about consistent, persistent pursuit of positive change. This is what happens. Why are we in the same situation with the same people, same color, with different names for the last 100 years? The same exact thing. I'll tell you why. And we're gonna end on this. Because people quit at 25% of the way there. 99% of the people quit at 25% of the way there. I'm changing my Friday training this Friday to do all Q&A to answer questions just like this, to help people so that we don't quit. We don't quit. Something else can't come up next week and we forget about that, or it takes a back seat. Let's keep the consistent, persistent pressure all the way through November and beyond. Let's vote your conscience of what you want this country to look like. And I want it to be a unified country. It's my belief. This is truly my belief. And they did Stanford research on this before COVID even, that unbelievable percentage of people graduating college, the one thing they wanted from a leader was unification. That was the number one thing. Well, here's the problem. I think that 99% of the people in America want to be unified. And I wish that I could figure out how we could all gang up together, all 99% of us, and grab the 1% and send them to Australia or somewhere else, like the old days. Like literally, let's just get rid of that 1%. Because that 1% in social media, that 1% within our companies, that 1% within our communities, that 1% of the protesters, that 1% in our homes, they're ruining it. Because you know why? The rest of us are quitters, right? The 1%, they don't quit because the negativity is always there. It's much harder to do what I'm doing, to create a platform of positivity, of change, of empowerment, of happiness. Way harder, but I'm not quitting and neither are you. So don't quit, let's unify and let's keep the conversation going. Let's vote, let's do everything positive that we can for productive change, but let's let not us quit. 99% can't quit at 25%, and then another 99% can't quit at 50%. So when November comes and we have voter apathy and all these things happen again because something else occurred, we're not going to do it this time. If I have to have my trainings every Friday to talk about this every Friday, that's what I'm going to do. I'll answer questions every Friday, all Friday, to keep the conversation going. But do not quit and think unification, not equality.
Hey, podcast listeners. Thank you for listening, as always, to today's episode. I know you've been enjoying the Road to Revenue episodes. They are downloading at record paces, and I am so grateful for you joining me, not only on the podcast, but live every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific time, 2 p.m. Eastern. Make sure you email me at david@dmeltzer.com or text me at 949-298-2905. Thank you so much.